And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, August 25th, 2016. Want to remind you that having a pencil and paper handy will allow you to write down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, any and all information you need to take action. Let's start with announcements. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration this Saturday, August 27th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. We will meet up in Davenport, and then they will caravan to the location for the restoration, and I will give you directions in a minute. Volunteers are invited by the Bureau of Land Management to work a project on BLM's Coast Dairies Management Area. The Coast Dairies property, owned for a century by the Coast Dairies and Land Company, was the third largest privately held piece of California coast from San Francisco to the Mexican border. This unique 5,800-acre property is adjacent to the small town of Davenport and boasts six watersheds and more than 7 miles of coastal resources, including hundreds of acres of agricultural lands, redwood forests, endangered species habitat, and more. Come on out and give a helping hand to protect this spectacular land. We will be doing a follow-up removal on invasive non-native purple star thistle. See you there. And this is how you get there. Due to no public access on the land at this time, we will meet up at the parking lot across from the Whale City Bakery in Davenport at 10 a.m., and then they will caravan to the location. Because it is a caravan, do not show up late. Get there by 10 a.m. To get there, take Highway 1 north to Davenport. That's all you need to do. The bakery's on the right. Your parking lot is on the left or coastal side. Once again, this Saturday, 10 a.m., across from the Whale City Bakery in Davenport, you will be doing a restoration on the BLM Coast Dairies property. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitats in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the designated location. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80, wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine, but if things get particularly unpleasant, they'll call it a day. They'll probably be fog early and sun later. Tools are provided. Bring your gloves and your water. For more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, area code 831-462-4041. That number again, 831-462-4041, or you could email her at redwoodrn@packbell.net. That's redwoodrn@packbell.net, or you can go to the webpage www.cruzcnps.org, cruzcnps.org. And rewards are offered in two poaching investigations. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife are looking for any information the public may have regarding two unsolved crimes: the unlawful killing of a male bighorn sheep in Siskiyou County and the unlawful maiming of an adult male deer in Humboldt County. The bighorn carcass was discovered near the Jenny Creek camping area and reported to CDFW by a citizen on June 12, 2016. The head and horns had been removed from the sheep, and the remaining portion of the carcass was left alongside of Copco Road at the Iron Gate Lake Road, just out of sight of passing vehicles. Officers are uncertain about the cause of death, but it is always unlawful to remove and possess parts of wildlife that were not legally harvested. On July 29, 2016, CDFW responded to a citizen report of an injured deer at the 6400 block of Elk River Road in Eureka. Wildlife officers discovered the large deer had been shot through its back, which injured its spine and left it paralyzed. Due to the severity of the injuries and the suffering, the deer had to be euthanized. Evidence indicated the deer was illegally shot with a high-powered rifle, which was consistent with nearby residents' reports of gunshots in the early morning hours that day. Anyone with information about these incidents is encouraged to call CalTIP, CDFW's confidential secret witness program. the number 888-334-2258. Once again, that is 888-334-2258. Or you could send a text to TIP411. That's TIP411. Both methods allow the public to provide wildlife officers with factual information to assist with these and other investigations. Callers may remain anonymous if desired. However, there is a reward. Humane Society of the United States and Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust learned of these cases and previous news articles and contacted CFW to pledge a reward of up to $5,000 in addition to the $1,000 reward from the CalTIP program for information that leads to the arrest and conviction of either of these two cases. For more information on the CalTIP program or to download the CalTIP reporting app, visit www.wildlife.ca.gov/enforcement/CalTIP. That's www.wildlife.ca.gov/enforcement/CalTIP. And for more information, go to www.wildlife.ca.gov. And the California High Court has upheld a ban on dredges to extract gold in this story from the Associated Press, as found in the San Jose Mercury News. California's ban on the use of suction dredges to extract gold from rivers is legal and not overridden by a 19th century federal law that allows mining on federal land, the California Supreme Court ruled on Monday. The court's unanimous decision was a victory for environmentalists and a blow to miners who argue that the ban essentially stopped gold mining because to do it by hand is labor-intensive and makes the enterprise unprofitable. Environmentalists say suction dredge mining risks killing fish and stirring up toxic mercury. The High Court's ruling came in an appeal of a criminal case in which miner Brandon Reinhart was convicted of a misdemeanor for suction dredge mining without a permit in 2012 and sentenced to 3 years probation. Associate Justice Catherine Werdegar, writing for the court, said the federal mining law of 1872 did not guarantee a right to mine free from regulation. Instead, its goal was to protect miners' property rights involving the federal land to which they laid claim, she said. The mining laws were neither a guarantee that mining would prove feasible nor a grant of immunity against local regulation, but simply an assurance that the ultimate landowner, the United States, would not interfere by asserting its own property rights, she wrote. Reinhart's attorney, James Buckle, said the High Court showed a casual disregard for federal law. He said Reinhart would probably ask the court to review its ruling or appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. Suction dredges are a powerful underwater vacuum that sucks up rocks, gravel, and sand from riverbeds to filter out the gold. State officials argued their right to protect the environment was not preempted by federal mining law. Miners countered that the state failed to show suction dredge mining killed any fish. The court's ruling came more than a century after the famous California gold rush that brought tens of thousands of miners to the state from around the country and the world. California has experienced a mini gold rush of sorts in recent years as low water levels caused by the drought have lured amateur prospectors to riverbed spots that had been out of reach for decades. There are more than 20,000 mining claims on federal lands in California, but suction dredge mining largely occurs in mountain regions. California passed a law last year that allows state officials to resume granting permits for suction dredge mining under certain conditions that include making sure the practice does not have any significant effect on fish and wildlife. Those conditions have not yet been met, so no permits have been granted. And the feds must study wind farms' harm to bats in this story by Jack Babosian of the Earth First Newswire. Wind turbine opponents persuaded the D.C. Circuit that the government issued a permit to an Ohio wind farm without fully considering ways to reduce the deaths of endangered Indiana bats. Ohio-based Union Neighbors United brought the 2013 complaint in Washington, D.C., taking issue with the U.S. government's approval of a permit for the Buckeye Wind Power Project. Indiana bat has been listed as an endangered species since 1967, though the species does not hibernate in the general area of the proposed facility in west-central Champaign County. It does migrate through the area during the spring and fall. In its application for an incidental take permit under the Endangered Species Act, Buckeye Wind LLC estimated its 100-turbine wind generation facility, with use of various controls, would injure or kill 5.2 bats per year. The finding that the proposal to lower turbine speeds during certain months met statutory standards, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service approved the Buckeye Wind Plant in 2013 for a five-year limit of 26 bat takings. A federal judge granted the agency's director and Secretary of Interior, Sally Jewell, summary judgment last year, finding no violation of the Administrative Procedures Act and the National Environmental Policy Act or the Endangered Species Act. The March 2015 opinion credits the finding by the Fish and Wildlife Service that the minimization and mitigation measures fully offset the impact of taking the Indiana bats, and thus it was not necessary to determine if the plan was the maximum that can be practically implemented. But the D.C. Circuit partially reversed the ruling last Friday, finding that the Fish and Wildlife Service failed to consider an economically feasible alternative that would kill fewer bats before issuing the permit. The service knew at a minimum that Buckeye claimed a full nighttime option was not economically viable and was aware of other more viable measures that would still take fewer bats than Buckeye's proposal. Union neighbors repeatedly suggested using a cut in speed higher than 6 meters per second, Judge Robert Wilkins said, writing for the three-judge panel. Yet the service failed to consider any higher cut in speed in either the draft or the final environmental impact statement. The Fish and Wildlife Service should have conducted an analysis of whether an increased cut-in speed would still allow the project to go forward while protecting more Indiana bats, the appeals court ruled. However, Wilkins granted deference to the agency's ESA decision, finding that it showed consistency in its analysis of this case and others. In this instance, because the minimization and mitigation fully offset the impact of the taking, the service found it was not necessary to determine if the plan was the maximum that can be practically implemented by Buckeye, the 36-page opinion stated. In other words, if combined minimization and mitigation fully offset the take, it does not matter whether Buckeye could do more. Buckeye has already satisfied what is required under the ESA. Accordingly, the service's ESA findings were not arbitrary or capricious. If you needed more information, go to www.earthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And a new whale species has been discovered in the North Pacific Ocean from the Environmental News Service. Scientists have identified a beak whale that lives in the cold and remote North Pacific Ocean as a new species. They have yet to officially name the whale, but have confirmed the species is a member of the genus Berardius. Scientists from the United States, Russia, Australia, and France searched museums and other sources for DNA samples to verify the existence of the new whale, which is smaller and darker in color than the more common Baird's-beaked whale. The challenge in documenting the species was simply locating enough specimens to provide convincing evidence, said Morin. Clearly, the species is very rare and reminds us how much we have to learn about the ocean and even some of its largest inhabitants. Described in an article published in the current Journal of Marine Mammal Science, the new species is an elusive deep-diving whale about 25 feet long that is rarely seen. Only 8 examples of the new species have ever been found. The majority originate from an area around northern Japan, the rest are from the Aleutian Islands and the Bering Sea. Every known specimen of this new whale found so far has been dead and in most cases decomposing on a remote subarctic beach, said lead author Dr. Philip Morin. Without a full skeleton of an adult animal or detailed measurements, we had to use forensic genetics to describe the evolutionary differences of this new species, said Morin, who works for the Marine Mammal and Turtle Division. Southwest Fisheries Service Center, National Marine Fisheries Service, NOAA, and the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, both in La Jolla, California. As much as we know about the genetic heritage of this animal, Morin said, we still do not know very much about the animal itself. We can draw some indications from what we know about other beaked whales in terms of its range and behavior, but we still have many more questions than answers. People who spotted a decomposing 24-foot cetacean on St. George Island Beach in June of 2014 tipped off scientists, took tissue samples, and later helped to track its location for months as Bering Sea storms rolled the huge carcass along the coast. The scientists worked with high school students and other residents of the tiny island inhabited by just 100 people, one of the Pribilof Islands off the western coast of Alaska in the United States. Co-author Eric Hoyt is co-director of the Russian Cetacean Habitat Project, which contributed genetic samples from beaked whales in the Russian Far East. Hoyt explains that the DNA analysis shows the new species and Baird's beaked whale are more closely related to Arno's beaked whale from the southern hemisphere than they are to each other. Japanese whalers have known about the black form but didn't consider it a separate species, says Hoyt, who is also a research fellow with the UK charity Whale and Dolphin Conservation and co-chair of the IUCN Marine Mammal Protected Areas Task Force. The implication of a new species of beaked whale is what we need to reconsider management of both species to be sure they're sufficiently protected, considering how rare the new one appears to be, Hoyt said. Beaked whales are members of the family Ziphioidae, which consists of 22 species. These toothed whales are notable for their elongated beaks, similar to those of many dolphins. Beaked whales are a medium size, ranging from 4 to 13 meters, weighing from 1 to 15 tons. Individual species are difficult to identify in the wild since body form varies little. Distinguishing marks are subtle differences in size, color, forehead shape, and beak length. Among air-breathing animals, beaked whales are some of the most extreme divers. The longest and deepest foraging dive record is 137.5 minutes at 9,816 feet. This is the greatest depth dive known for any mammal. A serious conservation concern for all beaked whales is their vulnerability to modern sonar operations. Recent strandings coincide with naval sonar exercises. According to a study published in 2007 in Marine Mammal Science, postmortem examinations of these stranded whales have reported hemorrhaging near the ears. Hoyt said, discovering a new species of whale in 2016 is exciting, but it reveals how little we know and how much more work we have to do to truly understand these species. And Canadian wildlife officers have killed 9 bears in 3 days. In this story by Ethan Liu, with editing by Sandra Mahler, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Authorities have killed 9 bears in 3 days in a western Canadian city, a conservation officer said on Monday, warning that the death toll will rise if unsecured trash continues to draw the animals into residential areas. Dan Bartol, who helped kill the bears, said the animals were killed last week in the city of Revelstoke, British Columbia, because the bears had wandered too close to humans, with one coming within a few feet of a toddler in a garage. I had to make the most difficult decision I had to make in my career, and that's to destroy the exact object I'm working so hard to protect, he said by telephone. Bartol said the majority of residents in the city of 7,000 do not have bear-proof trash bins, and he is still hearing about bears breaking into people's houses. And an undersea surprise, a big-eyed squid looks more like a toy than an animal. This story by Arlena Hartunian, Associated Press, has found in the San Jose Mercury News. A team of scientists and technicians scanning the rocky ocean floor off of Southern California couldn't contain their excitement when they spotted a bright purple, googly-eyed, stubby squid. They let out a collective whoa on video posted on the exploration vessel Nautilus's Facebook page as a camera on a remote-operated vehicle came across the iridescent cephalopod with giant round eyes, and then the joke started. He has weird eyes, said one enthusiastic observer. Get close," urged another. One suggested it resembled a child's dropped toy, and the other said the creature's eyes appeared to be painted on. It looks so fake, said one member of the Nautilus team. The creature looks like a cross between a squid and an octopus, but is closely related to a cuttlefish, according to Nautilus Live's website. The find could not be more than just bemusing. In addition to the googly-eyed cuteness, there is one thing biologically interesting about this observation, said cephalopod expert Michael Vecchioni of the Smithsonian Institution. The creature could be a new species, he wrote in an email to the expedition. It was spotted nearly 3,000 feet deep, which is unusual but not unheard of. But on top of that, the stubby squid didn't have chromatophores, cells that allow it to change color as other members of its species do, Vecchioni said. The question can't be answered because this particular stubby squid remains deep in the ocean out of scientists' reach. The Nautilus team is part of a 4-month ocean exploration trust expedition to map underwater fault zones from Canada to California and to understand the ecosystems around them. The team spends hours scanning the barren oceanscape. Then to come across something adorable like that, it's a real treat, exploration vessel Nautilus spokeswoman Susan Poulton said. And the Profanity Peak wolf pack is to be exterminated after cattle killing. In this story by Rich Landers of the Spokesman Review, as found on the Earth First Newswire. The Profanity Peak Wolfpack has been sentenced to extermination after resuming attacks on cattle this week, the Washington Fish and Wildlife Department announced on last Friday. State wildlife biologists received authorization to remove the Ferry County Wolfpack after investigating two calf carcasses and an injured calf in the Colville National Forest grazing area. The injured calf was classified as the subject of a confirmed wolf attack and the dead calves as subjects of probable wolf attacks, the agency said in a release. Since mid-July, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife has confirmed that wolves have killed or injured six cattle and possibly five others based on staff investigations. Jim Unsworth, director of the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, authorized field staff to remove the remaining members of the Profanity Peak Wolfpack to prevent additional attacks on cattle in the rangelands between Republic and Kettle Falls. The Profanity Peak Pack is one of 19 known wolf packs in Washington. Earlier this summer, WDFW determined that the pack had at least 11 members, including six adults and five pups. Initially, the operation was authorized to kill just a portion of the pack in hopes that that would be enough to reduce the number of mouths to feed and deter further attacks. Some northeastern Washington officials and representatives criticized the state for not declaring exactly how many wolves would be killed. State wildlife officials shot two pack females, including a breeding female, from a helicopter on August 5th, but announced an end to wolf removal efforts after 2 weeks passed without finding any more evidence of wolf predation on cattle. At that time, we said we would restart this operation if there was another wolf attack, and now we have three, said Donnie Mortarello, WDFW wolf policy lead. The department is committed to wolf recovery, but we also have a shared responsibility to protect livestock from repeated depredation by wolves. However, removing the entire Profanity Peak pack may prove more challenging given the rugged timbered landscape in the area, Mortarella said. Earlier Friday, Ferry County Commissioners unanimously passed a resolution authorizing Sheriff Ray McCumber to kill the remaining nine members of the wolf pack if state officials don't resume shooting wolves. Commissioner Mike Blankenship said he was willing to challenge state endangered species protections and jurisdiction over wildlife. That pack of wolves needs to be gone, he told the Capitol Press. I feel the sheriff has that power and that obligation as much as he would with a wild dog out there. County officials have pressed the department to eliminate the entire pack since 2014, citing concerns for humans, pets, and livestock. Maybe that would get challenged, and maybe we need to have a conversation. I'm sure it would be fairly mind-blowing case, Blankenship stated. Since 2008, the state's confirmed wolf population has grown from two wolves in one pack to at least 90 wolves and 19 packs by early 2016. And for more information, go to www.earthfirstjournal.com/newswire. And from England, the Badger Coal protesters have changed tactics in response to expansion in this story by Alice Ross of The Guardian, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Protesters against the Badger Coal in England have said they plan to change tactics by undertaking direct action to drive up policing costs after reports of an expansion of culling into new areas. The BBC has reported that the cull will be extended to five new areas in southwest England, South Devon, North Cornwall, West Dorset, and South Herefordshire, where badger shooting will begin in early September as part of government efforts to eradicate bovine TB. A spokeswoman for the Department of the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs said no decision had yet been made on where the culls might take place, but confirmed that officials were considering new applications. The shooting of badgers would continue in the areas where it has already taken place, she added. The cull is in its fourth year in Gloucestershire and Somerset and in its second year in Dorset. Jay Tiernan of the protest group Stop the Cull said, "We have spent the last 3 years just in the fields, and we haven't once stood outside a farm with a banner or blockaded a road or put locks on a business gates to stop their business from working. To date, the campaign has focused on disrupting the killing of badgers by discovering where the shooting would take place and breaking traps," Tiernan said. "We are going to change that to specifically look at policing costs. We are going to start looking at making the culls expensive." The group has previously been criticized for publishing a list of farmers involved in the cull. Almost 1,500 badgers were killed during last year's badger cull, according to DEFRA. That's the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. The government described the process as a success. "The continuation of the cull under Theresa May government will disappoint campaigners and scientific experts who had hoped that the policy would be dropped under the new prime minister. When within days of May and entering number 10, a group of scientists, including some of those behind a 50 million pound trial conducted in 2007, showed that culling was not effective at reducing TB in cattle, called on her for the end of a failing policy. At the time, DEFRA was reported to be considering up to 29 applications across 9 counties, including Cheshire, Cornwall, and Herefordshire. Bovine TB reportedly led to the slaughter of 36,000 infected cattle in 2015, had an increase of about 10% on the year before, and cost taxpayers about £100 million. But the scientists say the cull has had little effect on the spread of the disease and may even have increased infections. RSPCA spokesperson described the prospect of an extended cull as alarming. David Bowles, head of public affairs, said the charity had concerns about the humaneness of shooting badgers, adding, "We don't believe an extension of the badger cull will solve the problem of bovine TB in cattle. It ignores all the scientific evidence that indicates that cull will not achieve this." Dominic Dyer, the chief executive of the Badger Trust, said after 4 years of badger culling, no one can now doubt that the policy has been a disastrous failure on scientific cost and humaneness grounds. For the new DEFRA Secretary of State, Andrea Leadsom, to ignore the facts and extend this policy into 5 new areas of the country defies belief. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 9 o'clock. If you'd like to hear a rebroadcast of this or preview this Earth First Update, tune in tomorrow afternoon, Friday at 3 p.m. If you're in North Adams, Massachusetts, tune in to WMNB 107.1 Fridays at 5:30 in the morning. Or in Moscow, Idaho, tune in to KRFP 90.3 FM Wednesdays at 3 p.m. In Dade City, Florida, tune in to WLSL 92.7 Sundays at noon. Or tune in to the Grateful Dread Public Radio GDPRNashville.org. That's GDPRNashville.org. You can also find them on TuneIn and Spotify.com Sundays at 2 a.m. Or you could always go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous editions of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download at radioforall.net and air. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening. I'm Uncle Dennis. Please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.